My next guest says that even though governance activists are calling on companies to split the CEO and chairman roles in the company, that's actually not a good idea. Many times it results in trouble. Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, the acclaimed economist, he is the senior associate dean at the Yale School of Management. Jeffrey, great to have you here.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to be with you. But I'm not an economist. I'm just a management scholar. But I talk to economists.
Okay.
And sometimes it works.
Gotcha. And you know about this topic very well. You've written several books, including Firing Back, How Great Leaders Rebound After Career Disasters. That's mostly what CEOs you were talking to? Or?
Yes, exactly. It's trying to understand how people come back from adversity and taking some people with high-profile setbacks, from Michael Jobs to Martha Stewart and others, to understand how they got back in the game. Thank you.
I'm guessing Carly Fiorina was not in that book then?
Well, you know, I use her an example as somebody who really doesn't give us much in the way of learning from adversity because she doesn't admit to it. There's actually nothing wrong with having leaders who failed. In fact, many heroic careers are really punctuated by failure. But you have to acknowledge your setback and then give us a path of recovery. And she, by not ever admitting any of her setbacks, she really wants to go from a colossal failure to a commander-in-chief of the free world with nothing in between, and that's really not that inspirational to us.
Did Steve Jobs ever acknowledge his shortcomings, you think? Or?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he did. He's temperamental, and I think the film that's out is kind of a disservice to the Walter Isaacson book and a disservice to, I mean, it's a very good film, very interesting film, the new one on Steve Jobs, but it really doesn't really show his reflective, contemplative side. I actually met him. I was working on a book called The Hero's Farewell on CEOs leaving office reluctantly, and I was with Ed Land, who was the founder of Polaroid. And while we were there having lunch in the shadows of Polaroid, where he'd been forced out, some guy came over knocking over tables and chairs to get to us in the restaurant. And he's sort of a gawky guy, and he said, "Oh, Dr. Land, I just want to thank you for all the advice you gave me on how to launch a company that's a noble experiment of progressive management practices and scientific inquiry. And that's how I launched my last company. That's how I'm trying to launch my new one." And you would have recognized him three football fields away, of course, as Steve Jobs. But Ed Land didn't. He said, "I'm sorry, son. This is Dr. Sonnenfeld of Harvard. I was working behind enemy lines then. Uh-huh. And who are you?" And he said, "Oh, I'm Steve Jobs. I had started Apple Computer." And you know, it was kind of interesting as he talked about what was different in his life. And there he was running Next Computer. Never did we dream that he would have the comeback that he had.
Did you get to talk to him after that, or was?
You know, I wished I had. Obviously, it was as soon as he went back in there, I had in 1997 an encouraging note about sort of good luck and heard from him then. Mm-hmm. But he didn't seek my advice after that, sadly.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious: is it a personality issue many times where they come in extra hot and they learn, you know, I've got to calm down or I've got to act a little differently when they come back the second time or?
Well, you know, one thing they have to learn, they've got to acknowledge that there's been a setback. Many times, you know, you talk to PhD stress counselors, experts, psychologists, that will tell you that, take your lumps, tomorrow's another day, move on with your life, do some yoga, which is fine, or other kind of stress release activities. And they teach you something which has to do with stress management, but in fact, the current research on post-traumatic stress disorders, people coming out of battlefields or coming out of natural disasters or horrible things that have happened to people, is that, in fact, you have to deal with the source of the stress instead of just trying to find a substitute. It's like giving somebody who has an alcohol problem is saying, "Hey, have you ever tried drugs?" Instead of going after the source of the problem.
So are you saying for some of these when the CEOs lose their career, they actually suffer something like PTSD sometimes? Or?
It is. Yeah, you lose a sense of identity. There's a sense of wondering what your purpose and mission is. They've defined themselves as onward and upward. Many times their business card is basically so much of their personal identity and their social capital, and you just you wonder. So that's very disoriented. So they've got to acknowledge the failure first of all, and then secondly, to get help from other people. It actually, when you get into trouble, the most valuable source of help is not just immediate family members or friends. The intimate around you give you great emotional support, but it's those secondary and tertiary friends that you meet at high school reunions and people you've known in your past that tap at you into different networks that don't judge you, although they understand what you're going through. They can be very helpful because they do tap into, again, different pools of expertise and
Do they usually feel betrayed somehow that the people they were working with kind of stabbed them in the back, that kind of thing?
Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes they've done something which is their own doing. We know the prisons are filled with innocent people. But many times, if not most times, something happened that wasn't their own fault. A business could have failed because of some competitive intrusion that wasn't seen, or you're working for a division of a parent company that they're shutting you down or merging you out of existence, or the political intrigue, which, as you were alluding to, Michael, which is, sadly a part of human life, that a lot of times the politics or rivalry of envious colleagues or things can do you
in. Can get it, but they do get a golden parachute, so it's hard to feel that bad for them ultimately,
It is disorienting, though. So you leave office as a, you think of a violinist leaving an orchestra. She can or he can go off and perform and play in quartets or play solo. If you're the conductor, your instrument is the group. It's the organization. There is that abyss of insignificance. But, they usually, not always, but usually leave with a lot of money. Carla Fiorina sliced shareholder wealth in half. Right. If you had a dollar of HP stock 5 years later under her reign, it was worth 50 cents. They gave her almost $110 million to leave.
That's quite,
that's pretty horrible.
Quite a parachute. Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, he's the senior associate dean at the Yale School of Management. So you recently wrote about this thing, the splitting of CEO and chairman roles. Give me the basics of it. How significant is that split in the two roles? How do they work together, CEO and chairman?
Well, the people in the governance movement have been looking for ways to try to calibrate and try to predict what leads to honest, ethical, legal performance and better financial performance. And so you look for things that are easy to measure. Unfortunately, just because it's easy to measure doesn't mean that it necessarily matters. Mm-hmm. So they take a look at the age of the board of directors, or they take sometimes wisdom actually is helpful rather than just having all cyberpunks on your board. Sometimes having some grown-ups there, elder statespersons, can be very valuable, but they calibrate that what's easy to measure. And something else that's easy to measure is that they separated the chairman and the CEO roles. Well, there's no reason on earth to believe that separating the roles necessarily brings about good governance.
Do they believe the CEO is more accountable that way? Is that their understanding of it?
Yeah, the belief is that the chairman basically runs the board meeting, sets the agenda, that there's a way that if you're upset with the performance of the CEO, there's somebody you can talk to. Mm-hmm. But the ready alternative is to have a lead director, somebody who basically functions in that capability. And the chairmanship title is not so confusing to the outside world.
But
United Airlines, they're going through a little bit convulsive change. Yeah. They have a chairman and a CEO separate because they had to remove the guy who was chairman and CEO. We're looking at Ford Motor Company, not too far from you. Mm-hmm. Here the family owns 40% of the stock, or Walmart or somewhere. It's great to have a family voice as a chairman. Bill Ford is a fantastic chairman, and then Mark Fields as CEO.
You think for Ford that is a working model to have the chairman be the family member and separate the two roles?
It works really well for them. It gives them a sense of continuity, a sense of the future. I kind of wish in DuPont, the old DuPont family, had kept the chairmanship. I mean, they once did have a more active voice on that board. I think what's great about Ford is that they're always looking for the long term, that you have, if management makes mistakes, they're the first to confess it. They don't really think that anybody's on the line, and they can really make intelligent investments, and they really are playing for a longer term.
Too bad it's not working out for the Lions, unfortunately. Jeffrey, before I let you go, I got to ask you about the drawbacks. So you say that when the roles are split, it actually causes all kinds of problems for companies.
You name your corruption, you name your scandal from Enron to WorldCom. They already had a separation of roles. People like to tell us, in Europe, it's required to have chairman and CEO separate. Yeah, and then look at all the scandals you've had from Barclays to BP. It doesn't matter. In fact, you have chaos as to who's in charge, who does the media go to, who's accountable. You see all different people speak. So it's never been predictive of good governance. So it can make sense to separate the roles sometimes, but you can have fabulously performing companies like Walt Disney and others that combine the roles today. And in fact, the research suggests that if you have roles that are combined and you separate them, it actually hurts the performance.
Why is that? I mean, what is the effect on the company when the roles are split that way?
You know, it's a little bit of confusion as to who's in charge. So you don't have that kind of unity of command. If you have a problem, a lead director can always run the board meeting. You have people you can go to, and chairman CEOs who have not performed well have been removed, like we just saw at United Airlines a month ago. The chairman CEO was taken out without any problem. Mm-hmm. But if you have the separation roles in there, if you don't have the kind of relationship that, say, Bill Ford and Mark Fields have, it can be confusing.
Right.
When you see
leads to battles, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, you look at Royal Dutch Shell. You have the chairmanship of the Royal Company and the Dutch Hold and the Shell Holding Company and the Royal Dutch and all these different people. You're not quite sure who's in charge. And then when you have a crisis, whether or not you have an oil spill or whatever it is, in that particular case, it turned out they had misrepresented how much oil they actually had in the ground. They hadn't properly accounted for their reserves. Everybody's pointing fingers at everybody else, that the notion of accountability is so much more clear. I'm not saying, by the way, that the unity of roles of chairman and CEO is always right either, but it certainly, there's no evidence whatsoever to suggest that it ever has prevented scandals or it predicts good governance. So it can create chaos, but it can be managed well. You know, at a time of transitions, leadership transitions, it can work.
Kind of holds one person in place, the other one leaves, that kind of thing. You were going to say one more thing about Ford then?
Oh, no. I think they're just a fantastic and well-managed company. I happen to be a huge fan of Ford. I think, you know, GM's been doing a very good job, too, but I'm a big fan of the comeback of Detroit in general these days.
GM,
the Lions.
Yeah, exactly. For GM, it's that, what Mary Barra, she's the CEO, but not the chairwoman.
Yeah, and she also inherited a bad hand from her predecessor. You know, they had separated the roles before. They've been recombining them back at GM.
So she actually holds both positions now, or?
Yes.
She does,
It had been separated quite a while back and recombined under Rick Wagner. When Wagner stepped out and Ed Whitaker had taken a role as chairman, they had separated the CEO-chairman roles, and unfortunately the guy who was CEO was performing extremely well, and frankly I think Ed Whitaker was all dressed up, ready for battle, looking for something to do, and took over the position, which was really an unfortunate thing. And sometimes you'll see a chairman that's looking to figure out how to fill out the rest of their day, and that's what happened at GM, and then he got replaced soon after by another guy who was not an auto person, not a marketing person, not an international business leader. But you had two domestically oriented telecom guys in a row running GM, and unfortunately some bad decisions were made. Mary Barra had to be the cleanup person. She really does know the auto industry.
It's Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, Senior Associate Dean at the Yale School of Management. Jeffrey, thank you.
Thank you very much.